Hello, everybody. Welcome to our first ever post-Christmas edition of True Crime on Easy Street. I'm sitting here with some of my favorite ho-ho-hos. Merry Christmas to you all. My name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
I'm Kelly Turner, and I'm not a doctor.
I'm Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
Or a hose. That was a joke.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Just in case anybody out there didn't get that.
Yeah, we got it. Okay. We got it.
Well, I knew you guys got it. You guys are my favorite hose. Anyway, welcome to another episode. We're happy to be... We're recording on a different day today. I hope if you're listening to this on Wednesday or Thursday after this episode drops that you're not still sitting in an airport waiting for your return flight. Thousands of flights canceled over the Christmas holidays this year. So hopefully, wherever you are, it is at home when you listen to our podcast.
We are heading to barreling towards a new year.
And season two of True Crime on Easy Street.
Exactly.
So you say.
Season two.
This is our last episode of season one.
Yes. Huh? Welcome to the finale.
Oh, are we not recording next week?
We are. It'll be next year.
Got it. All right. I'm glad somebody told me that. And actually, I had to call Katie the other day and ask her why all of this information looks so familiar. And she had to tell me that we have already done this episode, sort of.
Sort of.
It was a live episode, and we don't record the live shows.
No. Yep. This is the this information. If you came to the live show, you've heard it. But it was one of our very first live shows. Yeah, not the first one, but
it was very early.
It was very early on, and
we're still feeling our way around.
Mm-hmm. And so this is a really interesting case, and so here we are again to talk about this. So if you were at the live show and you remember this, you're going to get a refresher,
and you'll be better off than me because so far I don't.
And this is not the live show that you missed, Scott. You
were I was there.
Present. And accounted for.
I remember the one that I missed better because she sent me the notes that she used, that Katie did on the show, and I read through it and it sounded very interesting.
I would
like to do that one again sometime.
It was a very interesting episode.
That was a good one.
That was back in the 1800s, right? Wasn't it? Or early 1900s?
Yes.
It was something.
Kelly found that case. I don't know how she keeps finding these cases.
I don't either.
Keep up the good
I don't
work.
Know what she's doing. No, just kidding. But moving into season two, we have some new avenues that we're going to explore.
Yes. I'm excited about some of, like, doing some... I love every case that we've done. I haven't had one bad time doing this, but I'm looking forward to doing some things that maybe a wider audience will be more familiar with. Like if we do something that's related to a movie or a true crime that people outside of the Southeast.
Yep. We're going to go outside of the South
in
season two. Sometimes we're still going to do our local cases. We still have a ton.
We're still
of
what we are. We're still going to do what we do.
Exactly. We're going to add in some more widely known cases. So if you have any of those to suggest, send us an email at truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com. I had to think about that.
I'm glad you, I would not have been much help there.
All one word, all lowercase, truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com. Send us your favorite case. It doesn't have to be from the South. It can be anywhere from all over the world. And we'll take a look at it.
I want to do one from Texas at some point in season two.
Okay.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is based on true events.
That was not a chainsaw.
Maybe. I don't know.
I always heard it was not in Texas and not using a chainsaw.
I don't know. I haven't done my research yet.
So I'm thinking we're not going to be able to do that one.
It's based on real events.
As you research that,
Scott. Scratch that. Just cancel it out.
My prediction, and I am not a prophet, but as you research that, I'm thinking we won't do that one.
Okay. Never mind. Just erase the whole thing, Katie.
But we might.
Pretend we didn't say that.
But we might.
I'm going to go home tonight and dig it around and see. Because you may be right.
No.
I mean, you probably are.
Yes.
It's between me and you, you're probably right. Thanks, Katie.
I am 99.9%. Sure that I am correct.
You know what? That's close enough for me. Scratch that. We'll move on to Goodfellas or Casino or something else.
No, I love messing with you, Scott. But we're going to add some more well-known cases, and we're looking forward to those, and we're already starting that list, and we're happy to add others to it. And those of you who've given us some suggestions for a more local case, we're not forgetting those. They're going to be there.
Some really good ideas.
Season two is... Wow.
Yeah, look
at
that.
Just
folks.
Go ahead and say that. Everybody take a drink. It's our drinking game. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Are we
gonna
We forgot about that. Well,
are we gonna continue that word on into the next year or should we pick another word?
I think it's like something we can't help.
I can't help it.
Yeah. It's like
That's true.
It's like Bazinga.
It's well
it's just our thing now.
Yeah, it's involuntary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm excited.
Me too.
But wait a minute. Better take a drink.
Oh, I see your Steelers cup.
Yes. Yeah, big Steelers fan. Christmas was easy for me because everybody knows I'm a Steelers fan. Mm-hmm. So I just have all this Steelers merch. I wish I had some True Crime on Easy Street merch to go with it, but that's a conversation we're going to have, I think, maybe mm-hmm. after the show today. So mm-hmm. another big announcement. Possibly.
Merch is coming.
Merch is coming. Okay. Oh, I forgot to take a drink.
Yep.
All right. So... this is Katie's show today. She's in the big chair. Mm-hmm. And this case takes place. Well, it concludes, I guess, or comes to some conclusion in the year of 2004. It
comes to a head, yeah, in 2004.
There you go. So a couple of things that we, as we set the table, didn't we decide we were going to call this something else? Didn't we come up with a better name than Set the Table?
I don't think we did anything to your segment, Scott.
Well, it's somebody, all you.
Somebody should. This is... just garbage, and you guys let me do it every time. Okay, so in January, on January the 3rd of 2004, Britney Spears married a childhood friend named Jason Allen Alexander in Las Vegas. That wedding was annulled 55 hours later. And later that same year, she married Kevin Federline, and we all know that that led to problems that Britney is still trying to extricate herself from. At least in part, that's the reason why she ended up in court for the last 15 years. I'm watching that documentary on Netflix. I haven't finished it yet, so I'm not qualified to speak about any of the details.
Katie, you have any thoughts?
I think Britney would look back on that marriage fondly. It gave her two children, and then she... That's
well, like I said, I haven't finished the documentary yet.
So. You're going to finish that right when you finish the documentary about the Texas Chainsaw
yeah,
Massacre.
Yeah, at the same time yep. tonight.
She does have to pay him a lot of money.
That is true. In February of 2004, a new... word came into our new phrase, became part of the lexicon, wardrobe malfunction.
I remember it well.
Ah, yes.
I saw the whole thing.
Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake, halftime of Super Bowl 38. I don't remember who was in the game even or who won it. Most
no idea, but I was watching.
But everybody remembers Janet Jackson's boob.
I remember because I was sitting on a couch at a friend's house. And it was halftime, so most of everybody was in the kitchen, mm-hmm. you know, grazing or getting another drink or something. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the halftime show, and I yell, boob, from the couch. And everybody's like, what? And they cut the camera so fast that no one believed me.
Oh, and there wasn't rewind at the time?
No.
Oh, four. If you didn't have the right thing, I mean,
we didn't do that.
I couldn't remember when TiVo or whatever became. Maybe
and then later, when it became a thing, I was like, I told y'all. Boob.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Maybe with DirecTV or Dish Network, you could rewind 10
seconds.
Does
anybody really believe that Justin Timberlake did not know that that was going to.
Absolutely
pop
not.
Out? No one believes that.
That was pre-planned.
If you saw the dance move before the boob showed itself, you know, because that's what boobs do, they just. Pop out of nowhere and wreak a lot of havoc. He says, you know, the line from his song, and he reaches his hand and he actually pulls it off of the boob.
Right.
He pulls the cloth or the fabric or the whatever it was, the sequins off of the boob.
Yeah.
There is a lot of controversy surrounding that now. It's like come back up and like, TikTok errors.
The fact that he was able
to...
we're
making it worse.
We are making it worse. But the fact that he was able to convince some people that he did not realize that that was going to happen is very funny to me. Because if you look at the lyrics that he was saying at the time and you look at the dance move, he knew something was coming off of that boob.
Maybe he thought she was going to be wearing...
something under the cloth,
pasty.
Over the boob.
Or something.
There was a pasty.
Was there? I don't remember.
It was a sparkly pasty.
Oh, I should go back and watch it again. Hey, more research for me when I get home tonight. On February the 4th, just 3 days later, unfortunately, Facebook wasn't around until 3 days after that, and it was just getting off the ground. So that wasn't the social storm it would have been today if something like that happened.
Oh, I know. It'd be Boobgate.
It would be Boobgate. And it was in its own way. In June, former President Ronald Reagan passed away at age 93 of complications of Alzheimer's disease. On July the 31st, I did not know this, Simon and Garfunkel got back together in 03 and did a 19-city tour in the United States. And then they finished up their nine-month-long, they called it the Old Friends Tour. Their very final performance was in Rome, Italy, in front of the Colosseum. 600,000 people showed up for a free concert the last time Simon and Garfunkel played together.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Or at least at the time it was. Maybe they've played together since then, but a big crowd in Rome. Katie and I were talking about this before Kelly was 2 minutes late to the recording tonight. Ashley Simpson did her thing on October the 23rd, 2004. And by that, remember? We mean she did not sing when she was supposed to on Saturday Night Live.
And she lip sang or whatever you want to
And I have her. Not seen her since.
I honestly haven't either.
Yeah. We used to hang out, but not so much anymore. Hmm. In November, for you sports fans out there, on November the 19th, and there's a couple of really good documentaries about this, there was this huge fight that took place at an NBA game at the Palace of Auburn Hills in Michigan, where the Detroit Pistons play. And I watched this documentary earlier today. I've already gotten that part of my research out of the way, Kelly. You'll be glad to know. But it was a big deal. Several players were suspended, one of them for the entirety of the remainder of the 2004 season. A lot of fans ended up getting charged with helping to incite what a lot of the public officials in Michigan called a riot, because it was. I mean, it went on for several minutes, and players went into the bleachers, and people got punched in the face. Nobody died. Nobody was seriously injured, but it was still a black eye, no pun intended, for the NBA at the time and really professional sports in general. So that happened in November, and some of the biggest movies of 2004, the number one movie was an animated film, the second animated film in a series, Big Green Dude, not Hulk.
Shrek?
Yes, Shrek 2.
Oh, I love Shrek.
Was the big film of 2004. It was the year of the Prisoner of Azkaban, for all you Harry Potter fans
out
there.
Okay, yes. Okay.
Spider-Man 2, and that would have been Tobey Maguire.
Okay.
The first reincarnation of Spider-Man. The Incredibles, a Disney animated film, was number 4. Passion of the Christ, that was a Mel Gibson film, I believe. It was big in 2004. The Day After Tomorrow, one of those epic disaster films. I think that one starred Randy Quaid, maybe. Meet the Fockers. Can I say that on this program?
That's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great movie.
It is a great movie.
It's a good year for movies.
It was a good year for movies. I didn't realize that the film Troy, that starred, I believe, Brad Pitt, he said in ancient Greek times, I didn't realize that it was such a big film. I always just kind of thought of that film as a bust a little bit. But it made $500 million at the box office.
Yeah, that's because
Brad... Yeah, I was going to say, can they do any wrong?
That was
yeah,
the,
I guess so, right?
Was that the first time in a movie that Brad Pitt bared his buns?
Could be.
Maybe. I would think that you would remember that a little bit better than you seem to right now, Kelly.
I think well, I don't know if it was the first one, but that was the big talk.
All right. And then finally,
Brad Pitt's butt.
Speaking of Brad Pitt, the number 10 film of 2004 was Ocean's 12.
Okay.
The follow-up to
that was a good movie, too.
Clooney and Pitt and Ocean's 11.
I like the first one.
I liked them all. I thought they were
really old
one. I think the second one.
Like the old one.
I've seen the one with Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. Yeah, but it was probably a great movie in 1964 when it came out, and it all the celebrities and that Clooney and Pitt did the same thing, did a great job of it. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you watch the second one with Clooney and Pitt, I mean, they just kind of steal the show.
Yeah.
So. Says the person whose favorite movie is Smokey and the Bandit.
What? That's a great movie.
This is true. That's actually my second favorite movie. Katie, my number one favorite film of all time, as everyone knows, is Raising Arizona.
It's a good one too.
You have told me to watch both of those, and I have protested.
You've not seen either of those.
Neither.
Oh my goodness,
that's a shame.
That is a shame. You should
we
watch.
You should probably.
Can
cut
I tell
that
you?
From the show.
Can I tell you what KT and Nate are at home doing right now?
Taking down Christmas decorations.
No, they are watching Lonesome Dove. Nate has never seen Lonesome Dove.
Oh wow, I haven't
They're
seen that
starting
in a long
it.
Time.
They had the two big buckets of popcorn with the three popcorn. Sorry, Katie. Turner is here with us again.
Oh yeah,
again.
We have a live studio audience.
Yeah, she's
again.
Here with us again. They are eating your popcorn as we speak.
She kicked me under the table last time when I told everybody she was here, so I didn't want to do it again.
Yeah, okay. Well, they're eating her popcorn and watching Lonesome Dove right now.
That's for Nate, because I'm sure that's what he would say if he were here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
yeah, fun
all
stuff.
Right, that's all I've got. That's everything.
I like that.
That is
Thanks.
Absolutely everything that happened in the year 2004.
It was a big year.
Except for what Katie's about to tell us.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah.
Me too. Leaning back.
Well, we don't start in 2004. We're going to start in 1996, and we're going to talk about a guy named Jeremy Brian Jones. And I'm going to try to keep his name straight on this, and you'll see why in a second, why it's going to get a little confusing. So in 1996, Jeremy Brian Jones has two rape charges right out the gate. He's a young guy. He's 23, I think, at the time. And one of these rape charges actually includes one where he allegedly fired a gun at a woman to threaten her. And he ends up getting these charges reduced, and he's given probation. He has to attend some sex offender classes as a term of his probation. And he's quoted telling his mother about these classes, that he hates them, and, quote, doesn't want to hear those perverts talk.
Mm. I feel like the irony of that statement will make itself clear as this show goes on.
Yep.
Okay.
And it stands to be told that he is a very attractive guy by all intents and purposes. So he's pretty charming by all accounts. And he brags frequently that one of his big quotes is he could talk the panties off a nun.
Wow.
You see what I mean?
Good gosh.
You'd think if that were true, he wouldn't have rape charges. You know, you could just...
Right.
Yeah.
That's not.
I don't think he's as attractive as he thinks he is. Exactly. Then, obviously. Good Lord.
Yes. So fast forward to December 2000, and he is wanted in Oklahoma again on a rape charge. And he's 27 at this time. He is at a bar in Missouri, Joplin, Missouri, to be exact. And he meets a woman who is the mother of an inmate in prison in Missouri, and she's like, here, why don't you take my son's identity? He tells her his sob story on how he's wanted by the police, but he didn't do anything wrong.
Wrongly
accused, but he can't get away from it, and he's got these other charges that, you know, he was dropped just probation. Obviously, he didn't do those either, and he's just got to get out of town, but he can't get out of town with this name, his one. And she's like, oh, I've got you. My son, he's in prison, and I'll just let you borrow his identity. Lends it to him.
I don't think that mothers have the authority to do that.
You wouldn't think, but now we start to see what Katie meant about being able to talk the panties off a nun. She talked the wallet off of a guy's mother that was in jail.
The son's name, the son's identity off of a mother. How in the world... I mean, I have so many questions, but I'm going to shut up. Go ahead, Katie.
She gives him his social security card and some, maybe a birth certificate, some several identifying documents. And he decides he's headed to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. He's got some family friends in Tuscaloosa, and he's going to go stay with them. So on the 20-hour bus ride to Tuscaloosa, he studies his new identity. He knows it backwards and forwards. He's not going to be stumped. He is now going to be John Paul Chapman.
Oh, my gosh. So both are three names. Jeremy Brian Jones is now John Paul Chapman.
Chapman.
What are you going to call him for the rest of the show?
I'm going to call him...
Can we call him?
In my notes, I have him as Jones.
Okay.
So I guess I'm going to call him Jones because it's going to be easier for me not to get tripped up.
Because that's who he really is.
Yes.
Okay.
So he is John Paul Chapman. So if I call him Jones, that's because he's Jeremy Brian Jones.
Right. Got it.
He stays with family in Tuscaloosa.
Is he staying with his own family or is he staying with Chapman's family?
He's staying with Jones's family.
Okay. His own family.
His own family.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
And I'm assuming they know about his identity swap and everything because his mother knows about it. And I'm assuming I didn't read this, but I'm assuming he sells it as I'm a wrongfully accused man and I'm just trying to.
I found somebody to help me. So if somebody calls and asks for Chapman, come get me. The phone call is for me.
Yeah, but his stay was short because he was tracked down by a bounty hunter.
Way to go, dog.
They find his families. And so he flees Tuscaloosa and he heads to Mobile.
Okay.
In Mobile, he meets a home builder named Mark Bentley.
He meets him?
Meets him.
Okay, I misheard. I heard beat. He's beating people up now.
I don't know. We may be getting to
that. Okay.
And Jones has worked in construction. So he meets this home builder and he asks him for a job. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't need any help right now. And he's like, well, how about I just work today for free? And he's like, I mean, if you're going to offer to work for free, sure, grab, pick up a hammer. So Bentley is impressed with his work and everything. So he actually offers to hire him after that day. And he also gives him a place to stay. He lets him stay in his trailer. He lives in a mobile home park. He's like, I've got an extra room. You can come stay with me and my wife. And so he goes and stays with him. And but this guy is very Christian. And he tells him, like, I don't handle drugs. Like, don't bring drugs into my house. Don't do drugs. If you're on drugs, you're gone. Says, I'll send you right back to your mama, is his exact words.
I mean, he's just like, you can stay with us, but we don't want any crap and, you know, act right.
Yeah, you know.
Okay.
Try to be a good Samaritan.
Yeah.
Normal circumstances.
Don't bring that crap up into my trailer, literally. Don't bring it up into my trailer.
Which I would think as a home builder, you're used to people, you know, day laborers and stuff doing a lot of drugs around you. I mean, it's just kind of the culture.
Yeah, maybe why he was concerned.
Yeah, so there was no reason for him to.
But he also has no idea who this man is.
No idea who this
man is.
Met him one day. Offers him a job, offers him a place to stay. So Jones actually starts dating some women during this time, dates several different women, and they're all very accomplished women. Like, he's dating nurses and teachers, and one was actually a PhD candidate. So, like, nice, upstanding women, and he is living in some guy's trailer, building houses on the run.
So he's very charming. He is very charming.
Yeah, maybe he was a good looking guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say he was, and he was also very charming.
Yeah.
And I don't know what this guy looks like.
Yeah. And so Jones has a problem with meth. And throughout his young life, he has been on and off meth for most of it. And he, like most meth addicts do, gets back on meth at this time. And when he gets on meth, of course, Mark Bentley.
Mark.
Okay, I thought his first
name. The contractor?
Yeah, Mark Bentley, the guy he's staying with, he's like, all right, you got to go. So he moves into a motel. And in this motel, he meets a man named Craig Baxter. Craig is from Douglasville, Georgia, and he's just working temporarily in Mobile. They hit it off. They kind of become friends. But then Baxter leaves, and he says he leaves Jones a note at the motel saying, hey, you know, if you're ever in Georgia, look me up. Just
a friendly thing to do on the way out.
Yeah.
So 2 months later, we're fast forwarding. 2 months later at this time would be May 2002. Jones does look Baxter up. Jones gets beaten up, and he needs cash. And so he hits up Baxter. He must have had his phone number, and Baxter wires him $50. The next day, Jones shows up in Douglasville, Georgia at Baxter's doorstep, and he's like unannounced. He didn't know he was coming. He'd sent him the money, and Baxter's like, well, you're here. I guess you can sleep in the basement. His wife does not like this, of course, but she says something was always off about him.
You know. She just had a feeling about him, probably, like just something that just didn't seem right.
Well, you know, some guy just randomly showed up on her doorstep that her husband had met, you know, for a week in Mobile, Alabama.
And he's been beaten up, so, you know.
Yeah, that's straight up creepy out of the box. Right?
Mm-hmm. So he sleeps there for a little bit, but they eventually kick him out because he's using drugs heavily and he's not paying them any rent because I think they had come to an agreement, hey, you can stay, but you're going to owe us something. And he is not paying them. He's probably spending that money on meth. So he shows up at the neighbor's house, a guy named John McIntosh and his wife, Carrie. They're actually in the midst of a divorce at the time. And he shows up at John's house and he's crying. And John's on the record saying, like, he just seemed like a very weak man, a very sensitive man. Like, he just kind of wanted to help him. He's like, well, me and my wife are split up anyway. She's not here. So you know what? You can stay. He lets him stay at his house, and he actually gets him a job at a refinery that he manages and has him start welding training.
So that's going to pay very well.
Yes. And John Paul Chapman passes a background check.
So he's going to all these places, assume, with this identity.
With this John Paul Chapman.
Okay. Even though the real John Paul Chapman is incarcerated.
John Paul Chapman.
Right?
Yes. John, but this John Paul Chapman with Jeremy Brian Jones's fingerprints passes right through.
Got it.
So I guess there could be two.
Somebody half-assed that, yeah.
Well, you'll see in a little bit, but yes, John Paul Chapman passes a background check to get this job at this refinery. They do background checks. So now we're in Halloween of 2002, and Jones, or Chapman, same guy.
Right.
He's still staying with the McIntoshes. He actually helps out their son get his Halloween costume ready, him and some friends. He helps paint their face. Or it's Gibson's. It's a popular Douglasville tavern is how it's labeled. Mm-hmm. And about midnight at Gibson's, a woman in a Betty Boop costume named Tina Mayberry is said to have left Gibson's to go to her car. Minutes later, she staggers back into this bar, and she's been stabbed repeatedly and dies the next couple hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And there's no suspects. No strong suspects are identified. Woman leaves this bar, stabbed, comes back in, can stagger her way back in, dies at the hospital a couple hours later. They don't know who does it.
And she doesn't know. She's not able to
communicate
who did this.
Nope. And then so that's coming up on the end of 2002. In the years 2003 and 2004, Jones is arrested three separate times in Douglas and Carroll counties in Georgia. Each time, he's fingerprinted, you know, booked and everything. Each time, the FBI, you know, fingerprint database or whatever, fails to recognize who he really is.
I wonder if those ever got sent to the FBI. Yeah. I don't know how that procedure works or worked back then, but I mean, three times, it sounds to me like somebody, that sounds like the FBI wouldn't be the mistake there, but who knows? That was 17 years ago. We'll never find out.
The federal.
So it's just throwing the whole system off that you have fingerprints associated with this different name.
I'm assuming.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But every time he goes in, he thinks this is the time that, you know,
they're going to get me this time.
Figure out that I'm, you know, wanted in Missouri or in Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
and get me. But every time they'll be like, all right, well, you've bonded out. Because at this point, he's got a girlfriend.
And I wonder, you know, the way that the databases work, they don't necessarily communicate with each other, or they didn't start until recently. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of information that didn't get shared in the days before 9/11. And
this was after
3 years
9/11,
later,
damn.
But think about how long it takes changes like that to take place. And I don't want to make excuses for anybody who didn't do their job in this situation. Maybe it will all come out, and maybe Katie's going to tell us.
Well, I mean, now in 2021, almost 2022, does everybody share data like that or not? Is it still up to the state?
I don't know, but let's find out.
From what I've read, though, this is not giving away the story. From what I've read, this was an error. Like he should
They should have picked up on this.
Yes, they should have picked up on this.
Okay.
I mean, that sort of communications technology wasn't that drastically different then than it is now.
Mm. Good point.
Generally speaking.
Good point.
Although probably a lot of upgrades along the way. Anyway, sorry, Katie.
No, it's fine. He's got a girlfriend at this time named Vicky Freeman that he lives in a trailer in a trailer park called Arbor Village near Douglasville. And just normal living life, normal girlfriend. And 2 months after his last arrest, where he gets out in 2004, the final time, a 16-year-old named Amanda Greenwell disappears from this same trailer park. And her body is found a month later in April of 2004 nearby woods, stabbed to death.
So let me ask you this, the Betty Boop lady, was she a younger lady? What age was she?
She was, I don't have or her do they exact have age, but it's not.
She's not a minor.
She's not a child, no.
Obviously.
She was in a bar, she's an adult.
Okay, so this is a minor. This
it's
is
not a pattern
year old.
Of the same type of woman, no.
Gotcha.
And so she's, Amanda is found stabbed with a broken neck. Mm. And then also in April of 2004, a woman named Patrice Andres, a hairdresser, she disappears from her shop.
You can find her story on season one, episode two of the Unsolved Mysteries reboot.
on Netflix.
I remember. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's another reason why this seems familiar. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then September of 2004, Hurricane Ivan is coming. And so Jones decides he wants to go back to Mobile and work a little bit, do some construction work, because he knows once the hurricane hits, there's going to be a lot of construction work. Mm-hmm. It'll be quick, you know, get paid per day, whatever. So he tells his girlfriend, you know, I'm headed out. He drives to Mobile. He calls her on Friday, September 17th to tell her, you know, he's got a job. He's going to be working. And she's like, great, make your money. Hey, we might can move to Mobile. That'd be fun. Like, you know, make some money, see if you can make a life down there. And if so, well, hey, I'll move down there. Well,
all right.
The phone he used to make that call turns out belonged to a woman named Lisa Nichols, who was later that day found after her trailer was on fire. And she had been raped and shot and set on fire.
And then he's using her phone.
Mm-hmm. Jones is arrested 2 days later for this crime. And he calls his mother from the jail once he's arrested. And they trace the call and they discover that who he really is.
Okay. So he ended up giving himself
He gave himself away. Calling his real mother mm-hmm. from the jail phone.
Let me ask you this. There are people who know that he's going by this other identity. Can they not be charged?
That's a good question.
You I mean, know, he's I murdering people. This is serious. This is you're not just using this guy's name to get credit cards. Mm-hmm. You're using this guy's name and you're murdering and raping and pillaging.
Yeah. You would think that they could be charged as accessories, but I think it no one ever is.
I guess they're just going for the bigger fish.
Yeah. Well, on December 4th, 2004, like detectives spend hundreds of hours listening. Like he has all these interviews with detectives and he's just offering rambling confessions. And they get crazier and crazier and crazier. And it becomes hard to tell if he's telling the truth or not. Like, mm-hmm. what is fact? What is fiction? What is he even talking about? He's on December 10th, he confesses to killing Nichols. He says he was high on drugs and it was like a fever dream.
That was the phone he used.
Yes, that was okay. The lady that was raped and shot and her trailer set on fire. But he just set the bedroom on fire. So really the only thing that burned in the trailer was her body was partially burned and like her bed and her room. Mm-hmm. And he confesses to the murder of just murders in all different states. Lots more than I've brought up.
Right.
Because I didn't even have information on everything that he's confessing to. He has a psychological profile done, of course. It comes out he's been in hospitals and mental health facilities at least 4 times over his young life because of drug use. He's said to have advanced liver damage from hepatitis C that he contracted from intravenous drug use. He is, though, found competent to stand trial on this murder charge. And, of course, he recants all these confessions, like he's confessing, and then he's going back and saying, no, I didn't do that. When he testifies at the trial, he recants like all of his confessions. He says, you know, no, he did not do these things. And now this trial, let me reiterate, is the trial for the murder of Lisa Nichols, which is the 45-year-old woman who lived in the trailer that he raped, shot, and set on fire.
And it was her phone he was using to call his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And say, you know, I found a job.
Yay.
Yeah. So.
That was sarcasm.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly. happy for him.
Right.
He says that he entered the home with her neighbor and that her neighbor is actually the one who shot her. And this said neighbor actually died a few months before the trial began, so that was very convenient.
That's fishy.
Mm-hmm.
How did this neighbor die?
Don't know. Cancer or natural causes. Or something. He was just, died of sickness. He was not murdered, no.
Okay.
And Jones, it turns out he was actually staying with this neighbor right before the hurricane hit. And the day of her murder actually was the main day the hurricane hit and the power went out. And so that's kind of how he entered her home and took her by surprise.
All right.
There was blood on his clothes when he was arrested, and that blood matched Nichols's blood. There was actually a taped conversation between Jones and this neighbor that he's claiming shot Nichols, and he's basically confessing everything he did on the taped
to the neighbor. Yes, to Jones is saying to the neighbor.
To said neighbor.
It sounds like he can't keep his mouth shut. Like he just wants to continue talking about everything that he's doing.
He's proud of what he's accomplished.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
And I think that has to do a lot with the meth too.
Yeah.
You know, you get on meth, you can't stop talking.
Could be. Definitely could be.
I'm not on meth. Stop looking at me like that.
I'm not looking at you. I'm just looking at you for your thoughts.
Whatever. It looked like you were thinking, I wonder how much meth Scott does. He certainly talks a lot.
That's not what I was thinking at all.
That's what your daughter's thinking now. She's laughing about it.
She did not deny that.
And during that psyche eval, they found that he was like a very calculating person, but he's got an explosive personality. So it's like everything that he's done, it's all in just like one spurt kind of ordeal. Mm-hmm.
And so they did not really determine that there was anything underlying other than he was abusing meth. Was there any other drugs that he was abusing? Alcohol, meth?
Yeah, he was a meth addict. Things that was his drug of choice.
Things that can make you explosive. Mm-hmm. And short fuse, things like that. So
they did say he suffered from depression and antisocial personality disorder.
Okay.
Kelly, I think you'd know more about that.
Well, so for antisocial personality disorder, so he's obviously not expressing any kind of remorse for any of the actions that he's mm-hmm. doing. But contrary to belief, antisocial personality disorder doesn't mean that you don't socialize well with others. You can be very, very charming, which is the case here. And what one of the biggest telltale signs of antisocial personality disorder is the lack of remorse. Mm-hmm. The people who have this cannot put themselves in other people's shoes. They don't want to. It's all about them.
Hurt them or offended them.
Correct. When we realize as human beings that we've wronged someone and we feel the need to address that with that person, to apologize to, you know, people who have been diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder do not see that they've done anything wrong. There's no remorse. They don't feel bad for the things that they've done. So if he's bragging about doing these things, you know, he's obviously, and when they were doing the interview, he obviously did not express or show any type of remorse. And I'm guessing they saw that at the trial as well.
Yes. And they said, you know, he's full of rage. They determined he's definitely capable of killing multiple times. They say that they don't think he's able to adjust to a normal life. Like, it's like every time he'd kind of settle into a normal life pattern, that's when, boom, it looks like an opportunity would strike for him to have another victim. And the jury reaches their verdict on this trial in 2 hours, and he's convicted of 4 counts of capital murder. He's sentenced to death, and he files for a motion for a new trial, but he's denied. He gets an appeal, but the 2010 Alabama Appeals Court upholds his sentencing. His confessions, he's got several confessions, that they think he may have committed up to 20 murders in 13 years. He's actually charged with 2 other murders, the one of the 16-year-old Amanda Greenwell in Douglasville, Georgia, mm-hmm. and the murder of a woman in New Orleans, a 45-year-old named Catherine Collins, who was found in February of 2004. But those are the only other murders he's actually charged with.
Yeah, because he, at one point in time, he confesses to the one in Georgia, the hairdresser that we said was on the season 1, episode 2 of the Unsolved Mysteries case. And I lied earlier. I've actually seen this guy because they do interview him in that episode. It's just been a while since I've seen this. But they never really could link him to the crime. I'm not really spoiling anything about this episode, so please go and watch it. It's a really good
Still a lot of new information episode. That you can hear.
Correct.
When you watch it.
Yep. Correct. Because they have several persons of interest, and he's one of them because he confesses to it. He straight up confesses to it, but they never could get enough evidence to truly link him to this crime. These other crimes, there's actual physical evidence that's linking him.
Something more than fingerprints, I hope. Because well, we've already fucked that up a couple of times.
Yeah, and something more than him just admitting to doing it, because right. that's not good enough. And one thing that I found that was always very interesting when I got into the world of true crime is how many times and how common it is for people to falsely confess to a murder. I sit here and I think, I wouldn't confess to a murder.
Well, he says that he did that because he got treated better when he was talking to detectives, when he was confessing, when he was giving interviews. He got better food. He got more phone privileges. Like,
so that almost like coercive type behavior. They treated him very, what? They were mean. He didn't get good food. He didn't get, you know, all those things.
Like, when he was talking, he was treated better. They said that. He thinks like he's got to call his mom 350 times. They found that he had that many phone calls out. Like, he just got to keep talking on the phone to his mother or whoever he wanted to, because like when he was being interviewed, he'd be like, well, if I can make a phone call, I'll keep talking.
Well, they've done studies with certain individuals where they would get them in an interrogation room and people would end up confessing to things they've never done.
Sure.
Because of the tactics used.
Yeah, and see, they weren't doing that with him. He was offering all this information.
Yeah. I mean, he was just doing it for better hot dogs or more talks on the phone with mom. Yeah. So yeah, they didn't really need to use any of that with him. And don't want to paint that picture that they coerced him into saying anything.
And I guess in his mind, there's no consequences to doing that. I mean, the short-term consequences are I get treated better while I'm incarcerated. The long-term consequences are I was hundreds of miles away when this happened, and I know that in my head. The chances of them actually linking me to this, they'll eventually figure out who did it, and they'll know it wasn't me.
Right. So, Katie, how did he get his nickname? He has a nickname. And were you going to get to that, or do we know?
They call him the low-rent Ted Bundy.
Okay.
And that's because he's good looking. He coerces these women. He, you know, he just kind of follows the same pattern as.
He's like the generic brand.
Yes, very much so. Because he's got the girlfriend and he's off killing other people while he's got the girlfriend at home.
So maybe we should call him like
kill his girlfriends ever.
Equate Ted Bundy.
How about I like generic Ted Bundy.
Generic Ted Bundy.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I worked in a grocery store when I was a kid, and I understand the concept that the saltines that the premium saltine brand is the same as you used to get. With the plain white cardboard box, it just said saltines down the side. It was the same stuff. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, wrapped it in a different box. And
I just see it as 30 cents like a watered down version of, you know, and I'm not trying to glorify Ted. Ted, horrible.
Yes.
I would not strive to be the low rent Ted Bundy. I'm sure he's proud of this nickname.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
Because he's still sitting on death row at Holman Correctional Facility in Atmore.
Is he?
Sure is.
And no, no.
Is there a date in sight?
Not that I've seen.
Execution date?
Let me do a quick Google. I didn't see one.
Probably, as long as it takes these days. I mean.
And this is a guy, you know, he killed a 16-year-old. Let's not forget this. You know, I'm not saying that it's okay to kill adults. It's okay to kill women. But, I mean, this guy has proven that he does not care. I mean,
he's never gone on trial for that.
He was found guilty, though, wasn't he?
No.
Didn't you say
not of, not of the teenager in Georgia.
He was charged with her.
He was charged with
her. He's never went on trial for any of the other murders because he's sitting on
because he's already sitting there.
That's on standby in case, God forbid, he ever gets out in Alabama.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Georgia will get him,
Judith Ann Neely's sort
of. Yeah, exactly.
Or Louisiana one.
Yeah.
We'll get him first. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't see an execution date on here.
Okay.
Well, maybe soon, fingers crossed.
Ugh.
There's any justice in the world.
I keep making that noise. Ugh.
Maybe we should make that the drink noise for season two, since you're going to make it so much.
It should be the drink noise for this episode.
Either that or Katie's new cough that she's just found.
I've gotten so choked up. I've been at home alone, and I haven't spoken to anyone in days, I don't think, except Scott called me on the phone the other day. And
well, that just means I should call more often and speak for longer, if that will have her
exercise
voice
those vocal
in better
cords.
Shape when we get here to record.
Yep. No, you did a great job. Thank you, Katie. That was a very interesting case. And as you can see, it definitely deserved some airtime here besides just doing a live show.
I think it was pretty interesting even to your daughter because she looked up from her phone once.
She did.
While this episode was
underway. She looked up and thought, that was interesting.
Not just then when I said that because she's not listening to a word that I'm saying. No. And she's sitting within arm's reach of me right now. She still doesn't know that we're talking about her. Anyway, wrapping it up.
Don't forget
That's
to
hilarious.
Don't forget to come find us on social media. Come see us live when, you know, we get back on stage.
We'll get back on stage in 2022 and we'll let you all know about it.
All of the details.
Yes. And
come back for season two.
Season two. I'm so excited. Thank you for joining us for season one. We appreciate each and every one of you. Have a happy and safe new year.
Good night, everybody.